with somebody, you didn't have any trouble. Of course, when they decided to to get rid of the Jews in the fan department, or most of them, they I think they must have figured on getting rid of me too. But as I say, at that time they got into a suit with the Siaki brothers, and I was an expert in the resistance welding field, so they had to keep me, and I had no trouble after that.
So it was a combination of luck and skill.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, skill never amounted to much when it came to anti-Semitism or to the way they operated. They didn't go on merit. That's ridiculous that they say now they went on merit. They never went on merit. In baseball and football, the blacks are excellent athletes. They wouldn't, until they hired Jackie Robinson, they wouldn't hire a black, except they'd hire a black and call him a Cuban, which I guess made him kosher.
How about social compatibility? Was that a factor in hanging in there?
Well, I didn't have... I had friends in the patent department, and I didn't have any problems with them. You never know what they say behind your back. But I didn't have any problems with them, and of course there's a few of them left, and we still, there's one that lives down, his name is Swingle, he lives down in Fort Lauderdale, and he comes up to Chautauqua every year, and I don't know why he has, and every year on the way back he calls here, and they either take us out to dinner or my wife makes the dinner for us, and I think he's become civilized. He wasn't that way. He told me that his father had told him, he was a Methodist, that his father had told him that the Catholics have so many homes for orphans because they have to take care of the illegitimate children that the nuns have from the priests.
Okay.
I think he's become, that fellow became civilized. He's a fairly intelligent man. After 1948, Jews gradually became more acceptable. Now, even in 1948, there was a fellow named Friedman, who was a very good friend of mine, whom they accepted. You know, when Steiger was sparring these Jews, he praised Friedman to the skies. And I don't know why this was, except maybe to hide the antagonism.
One of the other reasons that I'm led to believe that you're important to the Jewish community is that apparently you've written letters to the editor and exhibited citizenship in other ways. And I don't think we've touched on any of that, have we?
No, I guess I don't regard that as too important. I had a... every once in a while get a letter printed in the New York Times, and every once in a while it gets printed here. Sometimes they print them and sometimes they don't.
Are there
I don't know if I have the copies of the letter that I had in the New York Times.
Are the letters on one particular area of interest or a wide range of subjects, or...?
They're fairly well scattered, if I could find these. Let me see if I can find them. You can read them for yourself.
Maybe we'll take those after we shut the tape off.
But yeah, okay.
Maybe you can just tell us something about it that we can...
Well, there was one situation where I read that what they were trying to do I think there was considerable correspondence on this. They were trying, somebody was trying to compare the situation in Nicaragua with the situation in the United States during the Civil War, which was an analogous situation. And they were pretty rough, you know, during the Civil War. They suspended the writ of habeas corpus, particularly in Baltimore. I mean, Lincoln did it himself, and then the president doesn't have the power to suspend the writ of habeas corpus, but then it was confirmed by the Congress. And then there was a letter that from a professor at Brooklyn College of the University of New York, saying that Lincoln was a great humanitarian. Well, then I remembered the ex parte Milligan case. And Milligan lived in Indiana. He had never been in the services. He lived there in 20 years. But what he did do, he vocally supported the Confederacy. So he was picked up by the army, tried by court-martial, and sentenced to be hanged. And that was not uncommon. It was in 1864 that he was picked up, and this case dragged a little bit. And according to this Brooklyn College professor, Lincoln delayed approving the sentence. The president has to approve a sentence like that. Lincoln delayed the approval of the sentence, and before he could approve it, he was executed. I'm not sure that that happened. I think he may have approved it before. At any rate, it had been delayed enough. Milligan was there was an attempt made to indict Milligan, and that failed with a grand jury. At the same time, he was in prison under a sentence of death. So there was a petition filed to the Supreme Court, habeas corpus petition. And I think they decided it in something like 1865 or early 66. And they decided that authorities were wrong, that when the courts are open, neither the president nor the Congress has the power to use a court-martial to try civilians. There was a 5-4 split on the power of Congress. The four justices said that Congress does have the power, but the president doesn't. In any event, Milligan was discharged. But this was not uncommon. Now, there was a Supreme Court justice who wrote the opinion in the Milligan case, who was named by Lincoln and had been a friend of Lincoln. And all the time that he talked to Lincoln, he always complained about the hangings that were going on of civilians. And when he got onto the Supreme Court, he wrote this opinion himself. And that it seemed to me that's a very good principle. I'm not sure that they follow that now. They didn't follow it in the case of the Japanese in World War II, but I'm not sure that they would follow it. They didn't follow it in the case, I don't know if you remember or not, but they picked up some saboteurs at the beginning of when the United States first became involved in the war, German saboteurs. They weren't tried by a jury. They were tried by court-martial. So they didn't entirely follow this.
And you related this to Nicaragua? Or you took issue with somebody who
did? Yeah, well, they haven't started hanging people for joining the Contras in Nicaragua, and the United States, they did do that. That was the point. Of course, my only point in writing it was to correct the statement that the professor had made, that they were great humanitarians and didn't hurt people too much, civilians too much.
Apparently you've written other letters to the editor that have been published.
Some of them were published.
What are some of the subjects that were?
Some of them were not, but which I thought were pretty good. Now, as I told you, I had pretty thorough Hebrew training, and the way I had a Rebbe who used to come to the house, and his way of teaching was simply to repeat, so I used to keep going through the first five books of the Bible, reading it in Hebrew, translating it again and again, so I remember a lot about it. And I remember when they got into this argument about creationism, and I don't think any of those people ever looked into Genesis and see what it says there. There's not one story of the creation. There's altogether supposed to be four stories, different ones, but there are two stories that are entirely different. It says in the first story, right at the beginning, it says God created man and woman in His image, that's the way, and He provided all the plants and everything else. And that goes on until the end of the first three verses in the second chapter. And those first three verses are the ones that they recite on sundown on Vayera Vahivoker. Those are the three verses. Then it starts an entirely different story. And that's the story. It says God created man out of dust. And then they decided it wasn't good for him to be alone, so they provided the animals, and he named them all. And then it says that they decided that they put him to sleep and made Eve out of his rib. That's an entirely different story. It's not the same thing. And the reason for it is that the Bible actually is not one coherent book. It's several books, basically an E version and a J version. E stands for Elohim, and J stands for Yahweh, and they combine those two without editing them at all. So you get one story on top of another. And the second story is the Yahweh story. The first story is the Elohim story of the creation. I've written to them about that, but they don't seem to be interested. And it says, after they ate out of the Yahweh story continues. I think the Elohim story starts. The Yahweh story continues. It talks about eating out of the tree of wisdom, or fruit of the wisdom. And then it says they got kicked out of the Garden of Eden, which is described as being somewhere near the Euphrates River, which is in existence. And then it says God put cherubim there with a flaming sword. You know, they still ought to be there. all that. I wrote to Block about that, but they didn't publish it. I wrote the New York Times when she took over RCA. I wrote to them telling them the story of GE and Westinghouse and RCA that I lived through myself, but they didn't seem to be too interested in that either.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they publish them and sometimes they don't.
With all your religious background and knowledge, are you a religious person?
No. I do attend the synagogue on the high holidays like my father did, and I go to the synagogue for Yahrzeit.
How would you like to be remembered?
Oh, I don't know. Probably nobody will ever remember me, so it doesn't make any difference. I have no idea.
What do you feel your contributions have been?
I'm not sure. You know, I've written hundreds of patent applications. Hundreds, actually hundreds of them, because I've been writing them since 1930.
These are for items that other people have devised.
Yeah, there's a couple of files right there.
None of which you have.
Well, there's some patents to my name, but they're not very important.
Really?
Yeah.
You sure you aren't being too humble?
No, it's, I'm telling you. Well, most inventions are not very important, so that's nothing new. So I've written actually hundreds of patents that have come out.
Are there any patents you wrote that were developed into things that are important?
No.
Nothing to change the course of the war or the course of our lives?
There are no such inventions anyway. No, nothing like that.
How about advice? Do you have any advice to give?
I don't think I'm qualified to give any advice.
I consider you qualified. Give us your advice.
No, well, what? I don't know.
It's a big, broad question. You can jump in anywhere.
On what?
Anything. You seem to allude to the education that your son had as compared to you. Maybe you have advice on education.
Well, I think it would be a good idea if they taught Latin, because I notice in my own case, when I see a word that I'm not familiar with, I sometimes can tell its meaning from the Latin root. You know, one of the things we did when we studied Latin was we'd take English words and write out the roots, like manufacture and
break them down,
bellicose, and most of the English words I think come from the Latin, and I learned quite a bit. And of course, you know, it's good to know about Caesar and some of the other things. I only had 2 years of Latin, but I'd say that was a good thing. I think a good course in mathematics and the hard sciences. I think everybody ought to be subject to that, but it doesn't seem to work.
Right.
It doesn't seem to work with most people. I know when my nephew went to Pitt, I told him to take the hard sciences, and he just got nowhere, and it took him 6 years to get through Pitt.
What about the introduction of computers? Has it changed the way people learn math today?
I don't know. I haven't had too much experience with computers. I have a calculator here that somebody bought me, and of course I use it instead of calculating. I'm not sure how much they teach of the fundamentals of science. Why you have a blue sky and why you have a red sunset and that kind of a thing. Why they teach that.
Okay. I'll tell you, one of the things that I noticed about you, you talked about 1917 as being the year of the flu. And you said you might have had the flu, but you wouldn't admit it.
Might have had what?
The flu.
That's right.
And wouldn't admit it.
Yeah, I remember.
I remember you saying that.
Yeah.
To me, that kind of indicates that you are going to succeed no matter what, and that you are high on life.
No, that was just plain foolishness.
Is that all?
Yeah, that's the way a kid is, you know.
Okay.
Until you can't stand up anymore. I mean, at least the kind of kid I was.
Yeah, the kind of kid you were.
You wouldn't admit that you were sick. I was.
But there's other guys who probably did admit that they were sick.
Yeah, but it could have been disastrous, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, people were dying like flies from the flu.
Yeah.
And it could have been disastrous.
Yeah, I kind of sense that you would succeed no matter what obstacles would come in your way.
I don't know that I succeeded.
Well, okay, I think you're being very, very humble.
I'm not too impressed. I don't know what. I hate to give advice, except when somebody comes in wants illegal advice. I can give them that. And, you know, they come in here and say they want to file a patent application, and I tell them, what are you going to do with it? And then I tell them, if you do get a patent, you're not going to be able to sell it to anybody. Nobody buys patents, just plain patents, pieces of paper. And if you're making a product, then you have to have enough sales to, if you want to keep somebody else from infringing, you have to have enough sales to pay $250,000 for a suit. So you have to realize that you're not going to have the world by the tail when you get a patent. It doesn't seem to stop it. But that's... we must have filed hundreds of patents for Numex when I was working for them, and I don't think any of them ever amounted to anything. We filed here, and we filed in any number of foreign countries. Never amounted to anything.
What have you found to be important in your life? Or in your time, or important to people? Am I asking you tough questions?
Yeah, that's a tough question, because what did I find to be important? At my age, very damn little. You know, it's like Solomon, who said everything is not, he said nonsense. I've forgotten the expression he used. Then he got old. You know, when you get old, a lot of these things don't look as important to you.
Is there anything that still remains important?
Well, you know, you see, I see these patents that I took out over the years, and some of which I thought were very important. They've run out. You know, they last 17 years. They run out. And you look at them, and, it's the past. I used to, get into a suit. You'd want to win the suit. That would be important. We had that suit against Siaki, and we worked on it, and we wanted to win it. So that, I'm a technical person. My attitude is always technical. There were times when I thought certain things were important. I remember during the dry spell, I used to think it'd be very important to repeal the 18th Amendment. But, looking back at it, I think it wasn't worth all the excitement about it. I remember I used to argue about that. Swingle and I used to go to law school together from Westinghouse. I used to argue with him, being a Methodist, I don't think he ever had a drop of liquor in his whole life. And I used to argue about it with him. It used to be very important to me. But
some people might say that the continuance of the Jewish religion is important.
I don't think it's important.
All right. Some people... think that the civil rights movement is important.
Yeah, I thought that was important. Always. You're right about that. I think that's important. That's not only important from the standpoint of blacks, but it's important from the standpoint of Jews. I think Jews benefited more from the civil rights law of 1965 than blacks did. But you know, as a Jew and having gone through the Hitler period, you'd have to be foolish to take an attitude that the blacks are somehow different. If it's logical to be a racist, and many Jews are racist, then so are the Nazis logical. Because, you know, they based that business on a bunch of theory on inferiority. There was a guy who wrote a book, Le Juif, a Frenchman, and there was a fellow named Stuart Chamberlain who educated Hitler on that. And it was the same kind of a thing, that Jews were inherently bad and had to be eradicated. And so I think that the civil rights movement is important. That's one of the things I still think.
How about the Russians' policy towards Jews? Do you think that's important?
I don't you know, the Russians are Russians. They're Katsapas. And I think that if somebody wants to leave, they should permit him to leave. But I don't know whether they'll ever get civilized over there and operate. And I don't get too excited about it. I've talked to Russians who've come over here and gone back, and they seem to be Jewish people. They seem to be attached to what they're doing over there. Now, the Russians used to come here and try to help some of them. And they do, they come here and they're looking for jobs. There was one fellow, Hamish. His wife was, I think, educated as a doctor in Russia. I don't know if she couldn't get a job here, or I don't know. I tried to get him a job as a patent attorney. He'd done patent work over there, and we weren't too successful. During the war, World War II, I lent a fellow some bonds to borrow monies so he could bring his family over. And I signed, used to have affidavits, you know. I signed affidavits for him. That fella paid off the money, and I got my bonds back.
How about apartheid?
I don't get too excited about that. I don't fully understand it. It seems to me that the blacks are taking it out more on each other than on the whites down there. I don't fully understand. I think Reagan is morally wrong in saying that he has to intervene in Nicaragua and in Libya, and that you have to have sanctions against Nicaragua and Libya. And he did use all kinds of sanctions against Nicaragua and not against the South Africans. You know, that makes no sense. I think that basically he believes, let me say this, the whole argument in South Africa is that the South Africans have a large mass of people that have very little rights, and they can starve them into working for very low wages under very bad working conditions. They don't even have the status of slaves, because if you're in the old days, before the Civil War, you bought a slave because $1,500, you wouldn't take a chance on giving them hard work to do. You'd hire an Irishman, they were then immigrating here, to do the hard work. But those guys are going to hire them. If they drop off, they drop off. So that's a resource. The whites there regard that as a resource. And they're not going to give it up. Now, I think that Reagan regards it as a resource. I think that's why, that's his that's his squabble with Nicaragua. In Nicaragua, they had a large mass of people. They had a few wealthy businessmen. The rest of them were people that were made to work at very low wages under very bad working conditions. The Sandinistas, whatever else you say about them, went in there and are trying to change that. And I don't think he thinks that's right. I think he thinks there should be a mass of people available to work for low wages. And I think it's his attitude in the United States that he hates unions. The free trade is just a vehicle for wrecking the unions.
How about a few other issues? I'll throw out a few all at once, see if you want to fill in on any of these. Drugs, the family units,
well,
women's lib.
Well, our family has always been pretty close-knit.
But do you think that these are important issues in the directions that we're going in here? And
as far as my own situation concerned, it's personally, I like a family. I like it to stay together. Now, I was brought up with the idea of the family.